If these people think they can chase us off over this, how do you think the rest of our year-long tour is going to go? Natasha chewed over that thought.
You're saying we have to show how tough we are and return the coins to their owners even if they're crooks themselves?
At the very least, we should return to headquarters and show we weren't beaten.
About that, why haven't we been picked up? Someone must have been dispatched by now.
Haven't heard about that yet, huh? I asked, then filled her in concerning Harris's hints.
You mean Leeson? Never called us in? That's unbelievable. I'm patching into command right now.
Natasha was our platoon tech, and I knew she could do it. I put a gauntlet on her arm.
Let's talk to the commander first, I said.
Leeson's dead.
I gestured with my chin toward Harris. He was trotting along the line, looking over his shoulder at the sky every few seconds.
Vet, I called. You got a second?
Harris turned to shout back something rude, but then he saw the two of us together. He frowned and trotted to our location.
This better be short and good. We're in a combat situation, and God knows who else is looking for us.
Vet, I said, Natasha is patching into command. She's going to call for support.
Harris hesitated. His eyes widened, and he opened his mouth uncertainly. Finally, he nodded.
Fine. Leeson's paced anyway. It's his own damn fault if they bust him on this deal. Call in the cavalry specialist.
Natasha worked her magic. She was on the line with Graves in 10 seconds flat, and he was pissed.
I've been waiting for this contact for hours,
he said into every headset in the platoon.
Put Leeson on the line, Tech.
Sorry, sir, he's gone.
Graves was silent for a second. I saw Natasha dialing down the number of people in the channel. It went from everyone to just the non-coms and officers, only we didn't have any officers left.
He's gone. Oh, yes, I see that now in the system. He's queued up for a revive. I think I'll postpone that until morning. He can sit in limbo for the time being.
A chill ran through me. Could he really do that? Just leave a man dead overnight because he felt like it? That seemed like an odd, godlike power to me, but then the process of reviving the dead into new bodies was freaky under the best circumstances.
So, Graves said, I show Claver is in command. Why isn't he on this channel?
Natasha said, he's not available either.
Who is in charge of the platoon?
Veteran Harris, sir.
Graves sighed.
Harris, stop hiding. Talk to me. What the hell happened to your officers?
With a look of obvious pain on his face, Harris began his report.
Claver took off on us, sir. He took the skimmer we left headquarters with and bugged out when things went wrong at the bank.
The bank? What bank?
Are you aware of the mission parameters we've been working under, sir? Harris asked.
Apparently I'm aware of frigging nothing. It's midnight, and you guys are out there cluster-humping in the streets, that's what I know.
Harris showed his teeth and squinted his eyes in anguish. I knew there was nothing he hated more than being left holding someone else's shitbag of mistakes. Nothing, that is, except for dying. Natasha tapped on my shoulder, and I turned away from the drama as Harris tried to explain how our day had gone thus far. Graves peppered the report with curses and threats.
What's up?
I asked Natasha. She pointed, and I followed her finger. I saw a mass of people. They were Tau, what looked like an army of them.
Behind us, too,
Natasha said, pointing the other way. I looked, and she was right. They were gathering on the streets in every direction. They all wore the same maroon-colored holographic suits. These weren't expensive projectors, however. These illusory suits flickered with dark, deep vibrancy. The effect was a ghostly one. It appears as if they wore shimmering wraps that were the color of dusk. They shuffled forward, readying weapons. They were closing in. Shouldering my belcher, I slammed my gauntlet on top of Harris's helmet. I knew he liked that.
What the frig, McGill?
Then his eyes crawled over the scene, and all around us troopers hunkered down and unlimbered their weapons.
Ah, Damn it, Harris said. Tell me those are Civvy someone.
I think they are, Vet, I said. But they're armed and well paid, if I had to guess. Or maybe they're driven by greed.
This time, we opened up first. As soon as we saw them expose their short-barreled automatic weapons they had under their shimmering non-clothing, we didn't wait any longer. Someone must have told these fellows we were packing a fortune, which was true. Probably they'd been told we were leaderless and lost, which was partly true. But the one thing we weren't was weak. We had firepower and training this mob of thugs could only dream of. We slathered them with beams and bullets until the front line fell, shattered. I have to admit I fully expected them to turn tail and run screaming at that point. I even let my weapon dip. But when the smoke cleared, there were even more of them than before. Any mob on Earth would have broken. But these people weren't human. I could only surmise that greed was such a powerful motivator among the Tau that they could be driven to do reckless behavior by it. Apparently, the emotion was akin to hate or even love for these beings. Instead of fleeing, they charged in a convulsive mass. The front line showered us with explosive pellets. A few on my team had been surprised enough to forget to slam down their visors. Pellets popped into two troopers' faces and provided them with an instant, gory death. Cranking my weapon aperture as widely as it would go, I set it for a broad cone dispersion pattern. My next blast hosed down 100 of them, giving their unshielded skin about 1,000 degrees C of energy. I didn't feel good about doing it, but I hadn't started this fight. After that, they rushed in too close. I couldn't get off another effective blast. I had to drop my cannon, set my legs, and extend my force blades. All around me, troops were doing the same. We fought in close quarters. It was a vicious struggle with ghostly people that quivered and wore colored lights for clothing. They flickered as we fought them. Only when they died and the power to their illusionary circuits was cut could we see the reality of their bodies underneath. Pink, covered in ropey veins, they shivered and died at our feet. They formed a howling wall around us for maybe 2 minutes. That was all it took. After that, sanity returned. The fight was over, and about half of us was still standing. I guess that meant we'd won. Sargon had gone down. Natasha was hurt but able to stand while hobbling on one stiff leg. Veteran Harris was on his back but still breathing. Carlos had made it too, and for once he didn't have anything funny to say.
"That was unbelievable," he said, staring at the bodies. "Can they really want galactic credits that badly? So weird."
"I don't know," I said. "Maybe something else was driving them. The bank guards weren't this crazy. Why these folks? Why now?"
Carlos shook his head and went to help the survivors get on their feet and gather up the fallen equipment and coins.
"Can you get up, Vet?"
I asked Harris, moving to where he lay on his back like a beached turtle. His face was sweating and his visor was open. His breath came out in puffs.
"Does it look like I'm getting up?"
he demanded in a wheezing voice. I peered into his face and checked his vitals. As far as I could tell, his spinal cord had been severed somewhere down the line. The back plate of his armor had taken a lot of rounds, and it looked like someone had beaten on it with a jackhammer. Harris looked at me and laughed suddenly. He sounded half mad. His tongue showed pink and his teeth were outlined in red. When he was done laughing, he didn't close his mouth again. His eyes just stared at me, and his lips froze wide, still in the midst of a belly laugh. He was as dead as a dead man could be. Natasha put a hand on my shoulder. Her face was dirty and she looked bloody and stressed.
"You're in command now, McGill. You're the senior non-com."
"Crap," I muttered. Chapter 15. I've fought and died on several planets in my lifetime,
But Tech World had to be the strangest. About 10 minutes after the battle was over, the death officials arrived. As before, they didn't ask questions or fill out reports. They made no effort to figure out what had happened or who was at fault. All they wanted to know was who had died and whether or not they could make a buck off the corpse. Apparently, the Reaper had brought in a pretty poor crop this time. Unlike the relative excitement these ghouls had exhibited when our original clients had died on the steps to the bank, this time they were disgusted. They kicked at the bodies and shoveled them wholesale onto a skimmer. There would be no expensive revival processes tonight. I approached the nearest of them, and he watched me warily. "Speak English?" I demanded.
"Little bit," he said. "No deals."
Snorting, I reached out and showed him what I had in my hand. It was a golden coin, an imperial coin that apparently everyone on Gelt Station knew was priceless. He snatched for it, but I was quicker. I closed my gauntlet over the coin and pointed to the skimmer they were loading with bodies. "Give us a ride on that thing. You get this coin now, and one more when you get home."
"Two?"
he asked, as if he couldn't believe his ears. "Two," I said firmly. "Deal?" His eyes darted over to the corpses. I knew he was calculating the profit he could make here, weighing it against what I was offering. I had to wonder what value a pile of still warm corpses would bring on this station, and to what purpose they might be applied. When credit values were compared, however, there wasn't any contest.
"Move quickly,"
he said, pointing to his skimmer and chattering into a communications device. Immediately, the ghouls reversed their work. They shoved bodies off the skimmer even faster than they'd loaded them a moment earlier. I waved to my men. Each of us dragged one of our fallen troops, letting weapons dangle from straps. We valued the dead even more than the ghouls did. We needed to recycle their equipment. "Don't leave a single bag of coins behind for these monsters," I ordered. No one argued. They followed me as quickly as they could. We slipped and staggered as we waded through bodies. When we were aboard the skimmer, I gave a coin to the guy who I'd cut the deal with. "No funny business," I said. "Oh, we kill you all." He sneered at me, spreading his mouth tentacles wide.
"Nothing is funny here on Tech World, big man."
We lifted off then, and I found Natasha tapping at me again.
"It's Graves," she said. "He wants another report."
"Tell him we're fine," I said. "We'll be home for breakfast." Air travel always seemed like a miracle after a man has been slogging on foot. The skies were a different place, another world. We flashed at the usual madcap pace toward our destination. I now suspected that people on this planet piloted their vehicles like madmen for a good reason. They didn't trust passers-by not to attack them. It was difficult to accost a vehicle that zoomed by in the blink of an eye. We landed on the roof of the square block of Puffcrete that was our headquarters. Legionnaires were up there. Some were on guard duty, while others were just taking a break. They eyed us in surprise and curiosity, but when they saw half of us were limp in our armor, they rushed to help. Our biospecialists are a unique breed of soldier. Part corpsman and part mortician, they patched the injured among us and stripped the dead. I eyed the corpses as they were hauled away below, especially Harris. It still felt odd to know he'd be yelling at me about something in the morning, despite the fact that he was flopping dead meat right now. How different were we, I asked myself, from the death merchants that swarmed any scene of violence on Tech World. They were seeking profit, while we sought raw materials to rebuild a new version of every fallen man. I knew more than most troops about the process. The bio people liked fresh bodies. They fed them into the maw of their machines like fresh wood cast upon a fire. They called it recycling, and thinking about the process could still make me shudder if I pondered it too long. Finding my bunk at last, after a few bites to eat, I patched up a few minor injuries and took a long draft on a warm beer. Then I crashed and fell asleep instantly. A kick in the side awakened me in what felt like seconds later. I looked up, fully expecting my tormentor to be Harris, but it wasn't. It was Centurion Graves. I probably would have told anyone else to screw off at that moment, but you just didn't talk to Graves that way. Not when his eyes were dark and his lips were drawn into a single tight line.
"Sir?" I asked, heaving myself awake. "What happened out there, Specialist?"
I looked around the room blearily. It was empty. Several of my fellow troops had died during the long night, of course, but not all of them had. Graves must have chased them out before he prodded me with the loving tip of his boot.
"Lots of stuff, sir."
Claver led us into a series of unfortunate encounters. Graves produced a gleaming golden disc. He tossed it to me, and I caught it. Curvy galactic number symbols were engraved on both sides.
2 to the 10th power worth of credits,
Graves said.
1,024 in our number system. Why are there 20 sacks of these in my office?
Only 20? I asked in alarm. Every man had one. I hope none have found their way to another location. Graves waved his hand in my face as if to erase my words from the air.
I didn't count them all. Tell me what the hell they're doing in our possession.
I gave him a full accounting at that point. I didn't bother to add my assessment of Claver's part, which seemed obvious. Finishing up, I asked him if Claver had returned to headquarters.
No, he said in a venomous voice. He's rejoined Germanica. Oddly enough, he seems to be among the few Germanica legionnaires who are already aboard Minotaur. That's where you come in, Specialist.
How's that, sir?
In the morning, you and I are going to pay him a visit aboard ship.
Grunting unhappily, I rubbed my eyes. How long until morning, sir?
About 2 hours. Get some sleep.
I flopped back onto my bunk and sighed until my lungs were empty. Sometimes I wondered if I even wanted to be revived the next time I was killed. The next day dragged until we reached Minotaur. Watching Graves, I had to admit, being an officer had privileges that often surprised me. Rather than taking public transport at his own expense, a pinnace was dispatched to pick up Graves and me. We boarded the small ship just before noon and were whisked away toward the dark, hulking shape that was Minotaur. From the outside, the warship was more imposing than I'd realized. She was fully armed with a broadside of heavy guns. I didn't understand her armament, but I'd heard it was made up of accelerated particle cannons. Earth had never had control of a real warship before. But now they were becoming increasingly common. Minotaur wasn't just a transport. She was capable of battle in her own right. She was a capital ship, an engine of destruction. Graves sat in a gloomy silence aboard the pinnace as it shuddered and lurched, attempting to dock. Sir, I asked, why are all Minotaur's weapons on one side of the ship? He glanced at me as if remembering he'd brought me along. I could tell he was thinking hard about something. He'd been poking at his tapper and staring out the windows of the pinnace the entire time.
That's pretty standard design, he said. If they're bombarding a world, the world is only on one side of the ship. If they meet enemy vessels in combat, a big ship generally places all of its heavy hull plating and weaponry on one side. The distances are so great, it's unlikely a ship will be surrounded by enemies and fired upon from more than one direction at the same time.
But what if that situation were to occur?
Then the ship is probably doomed anyway.
I nodded as I thought about it. Combat in normal space, the only place that combat could occur, as far as I knew, usually played out at a range of 100,000 to 1 million kilometers. At that distance, only one flank of each ship mattered. As a result of her design, Minotaur was a lopsided vessel. It looked as if it had a huge hump on its back. We sailed around and underneath it into a bay located on the side opposite the weapon mounts. Disembarking Centurion Graves went first. He'd brought me along in full combat armor, which even I knew wasn't the norm when making a friendly visit to another Legion's territory. I hadn't argued the point, as I always felt more comfortable among unfriendly faces when I was packing firepower. Minotaur felt deserted as I walked through the ship's gigantic hold. Our boots echoed and rang from walls a kilometer or more away. There was no one here to greet us, but that didn't deter Graves. He marched resolutely toward the crew quarters as if he owned the place. 5 decks aft and 2 above the floor of the hold, we found 3 units from Germanica holed up. They were busy planning and arranging equipment. A centurion named Dubois met us in the wardroom. He had a slight French accent, and his demeanor was anything but friendly.
"Centurion Graves," he said, "I understand that you have some kind of problem with your new contract. This is unexpected." "I was under the impression that Germanica was to help us during the transitional period. Am I mistaken?"
Dubois shrugged.
"We didn't expect an experienced Legion to make serious mistakes at such an easy post."
Graves' eyes narrowed. I could tell he was pissed, but it took experience to recognize the signs. He wasn't an overly expressive man.
"Our trouble isn't with the post," Graves said. "It's with our liaison. Claver has gone off the rails, and as I understand it, he's hiding here on Minotaur."
Dubois laughed.
"Hiding? Hardly. He's busy performing last-minute critical adjustments to the biosphere. I'm afraid I can't spare him."
Graves took out a handful of coins and let them fall on the deck plating. They rang and flashed with golden beauty. I'd never seen coins outside of a museum back on Earth, and hadn't understood their luster and mesmerizing effect. Dubois wasn't immune. He watched them until they stopped rattling and spinning.
"Is this some kind of a bribe?" he demanded. "This is what was in the last crate your man Claver had us transporting. The first crates contained weapons of unknown origin. They were transferred to a group guarded by Germanica troops down at the vents. The gunrunners gave my platoon a great deal of illegal funds, which my men neither understood nor approved of. My troops were later attacked repeatedly by thugs from every part of the city."
"Nothing surprising about that,"
Dubois huffed. "Every fool knows you can't walk around with that kind of money in any city on any planet. You could hardly pick a worse place than Tau to pull such a stunt."
Graves and I exchanged glances.
"I don't think you're quite getting what I'm saying, Centurion,"
Graves said.
"Your man, Claver, he's otherwise engaged,"
Dubois interrupted, sighing.
"Now, I must thank you for your visit, which is at an end. I'll thank you again when you're back on that pinnace and flying out of here."
Graves shook his head slowly.
"That's not going to happen. If you aren't going to take disciplinary action, then I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands."
"And what does that mean?"
"I want Claver. He was attached to my unit, and he was under my orders. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of my legionnaires, and he's AWOL.
Dubois laughed again, grinning.
"I'm sorry, but I have to deny your request. His assignment with your unit has been terminated. Now, if you'll excuse me, we've got a journey not so fast. I've contacted Hegemony using an expensive FTL link system the Tau rent out for emergencies. They're sending brass out to investigate the situation."
For the first time, both Dubois and I were surprised.
"And why would Hegemony care about this situation?"
Dubois snapped. because I reported a galactic violation to them, and they had no choice other than to respond. Dubois' face changed. His jaw sagged.
You did? What? Don't be absurd. This is Tech World, man. I can't believe you're going ballistic over a bit of gun running. There are bribes and illegal activities going on every day on this planet. Didn't someone brief you?
Graves nodded.
I was briefed. Apparently it's your legion that didn't get the memo. Centurion, this isn't about the gun running, although it is the height of insanity for a peacekeeping force to get involved in something like that. The problem is that Earth is now the enforcement arm of the galactics in this part of the galaxy. In case you haven't heard, ownership and trading with galactic credit coins is illegal in Frontier 921. It's not just illegal on Earth. The coins have been outlawed by the core systems, and mere possession constitutes a galactic-level offense. An Imperial crime has thus been committed by the Tau and Imperial enforcement personnel. We're now representatives of the Empire, remember? Your man Claver facilitated this operation. Are you listening, sir?
By this time, Centurion Dubois finally was listening. He lifted a hand and snapped his fingers. His adjunct appeared next to him.
Get Claver's ass out here.
The adjunct disappeared. We didn't have to wait long. Claver soon came out of a nearby passageway, sauntering as if he didn't have a care in the world.
Ah, there you are, Graves, Claver said. Kind of odd to see you here aboard a Germanica ship.
Graves ignored him as he turned to Centurion Dubois.
Do I have your permission to assert command over this officer?
He asked Dubois formally. Dubois nodded. Graves turned to me.
McGill, arrest this man. We're taking him back to his post.
I smiled and came clanking forward. I suddenly understood why he'd brought me along. I was the muscle, and I was well motivated. Claver's upper lip curled as I raised a powered gauntlet toward him.
Unnecessary, he said. This is all a misunderstanding. We'll talk everything out on the way back to the station, Graves assured him.
I removed Claver's sidearm, and he did nothing to resist. Graves led the way back toward the pinnace, with Claver grumbling along after him, and I brought up the rear. My grin stayed in place as we returned to the pinnace. I don't think I've ever enjoyed arresting someone so thoroughly. Chapter 16. Once we boarded the pinnace, Graves' promise to talk things out with Claver evaporated. Taking my cue from him, I stoically ignored the mixture of scoffing, insults, and veiled threats the Germanica adjunct dished out.
There's never been any love lost between our two organizations, Graves, Claver said, throwing out his last barb. But I don't see any reason to take things to this extreme. Your men made it back to base without anyone getting permed. The mission was completed despite poor management on the part of your man. What was his name? Adjunct Leeson, that's it. He resisted every step of the way, but I managed to hold it together until we reached the foot of the bank steps.
Graves was as silent as space. He didn't even look at Claver. I tried to do the same, but I did grin just a little. I couldn't help it.
Look, said Claver, edging closer to the Centurion's chair. I imagine I know what the real problem is. You don't know how to handle those credit pieces. I can help you there. Sure, I know you can't just take them home to Earth and spend them at the corner store. But you can get good value out of them. 10% maybe if you go through me.
Graves finally glanced over at Claver flatly. The adjunct lit up, misinterpreting the look. I could have told him he was on the wrong track, but I was having too much fun enjoying the show.
Yeah, that's right, Claver said quickly.
10% of face value.
How?
First, we'll contact the dead clients. They'll all have been revived by now and anxious to reclaim their goods. A finder's fee under extenuating circumstances like these will be expected. They'll pay in clean credits dumped right into your tapper. We're talking about a lifetime of credits, Graves.
Miguel,
Graves said, staring at Claver like he smelled filth.
Sir?
Did you overhear Claver's remarks?
Yes, sir.
How would you characterize them?
I heard a confession, sir. Bribery, extortion, fencing illegal goods, a laundry list of crimes, Centurion.
Claver laughed nervously.
You guys have to be... I recommend you shut up, adjunct.
Graves interrupted.
For your own good. Although I doubt anything you do will matter at this point.
Claver frowned.
What are you talking about?
I said that I contacted Hegemony. They've dispatched a flag officer. Have you heard of Imperator Turov? Claver squinted.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one that used to be your primus? Tribune Armel called her a real bitch.
A poor choice of words, Graves said smoothly, although I didn't believe his heart was in it.
She's coming out on one of the new corvettes. She'll be here within hours.
I was as surprised as Claver by this statement.
Hours?
Claver asked.
Hegemony has been busy purchasing new hardware,
Graves explained. And the corvettes are their latest naval toys. Flag officers can travel first class now if they need to. Claver nodded slowly.
Good thinking, he said. She'll know how to sweep this business under the rug. Nothing like an Imperator for that.
Graves turned to me.
Specialist, tell the adjunct how Turov handled the last Imperial crime she discovered.
Sure. She had me executed. I caught a quiet revive afterward because it was all a misunderstanding, but then she went for me again anyway. Court-martial, the whole deal. She almost got her way and had me burned all over again. Fortunately, Tribune Drusus managed to stop her.
That's how I recall the sequence of events,
Graves said. He gave Claver a nod and a grim smile.
The only difference is that this time she outranks Tribune Drusus and Tribune Armel. On top of that, I doubt either of them would lift a finger to save your hide, Claver.
Graves turned away again as if satisfied. Claver was quiet for a moment, but he sighed heavily after a few minutes.
So, you're going for broke on this. Bringing in Turov to screw me permanently. That's unfortunate. For everyone.
Graves ignored him, and the rest of the flight went quietly. I took the opportunity to eye Claver in concern. He fingered his tapper now and then, but said nothing. He was no longer smiling and cajoling anyone, but he didn't seem defeated either. It occurred to me that a man like him didn't get a full head of silver hair without being resourceful. I watched the instruments and kept checking on the crew, but nothing seemed amiss. We reached our destination a few minutes later and landed on the flat roof of Legion headquarters. All this time, Claver hadn't tried to escape or do anything else unexpected. When we disembarked, he marched along in front of me without missing a step. Just as we reached the elevators, an emergency message came in over Graves' tapper. The Centurion halted and lifted his arm, frowning.
"Something on command, chat," he said.
After a few moments, he looked up at me. I saw a hint of alarm on his normally stoic features.
Specialist McGill, what kind of weapons did you deliver to the gunrunners down at the vents? I thought they fired explosive pellets.
I can't say the guns in the box were the same type, sir. We never saw them. I only have Claver's word that they were guns at all. Whatever was in those containers, the items would have to be unusual and valuable to warrant all that credit.
Indeed. I've just received a priority message from Drusus.
There's an attack underway at the umbilical transport hub, and the weaponry involved is quite unusual. In fact, no one who's seen it can identify the technology. Both of us looked at old Silver. He smiled back faintly and shrugged. Can I help you, gentlemen? You better not be behind this, Claver, Graves said. Claver laughed coldly. What are you going to do? Hold me in contempt in some galactic court run by nerbs, or maybe you'll perm me on the spot. What's the difference to me at this point? You've played your last card, Centurion. Graves turned away from him and back to me. The Tribune has heard about your jog across the city, the gun running, everything. He's not happy, and he's already done the math. He's blaming our new Primus, who in turn is blaming us. Our unit is to deploy in a police action to stop the riot at the umbilical transport hub. Claver chuckled. A riot, huh? Is that what it is? We're bringing this man to the line with us. I don't trust anyone to watch over him, not even you, McGill. Don't worry, sir, I said. You can give me his leash. I hate him more than I love money. The corners of Graves' mouth twitched upward. Good to hear. I've arranged air transport. Three units are deploying at once. Air transport? I asked. The pilots wouldn't be hired locals, guys who look like turtles. What the hell difference does that make? I sighed.
None at all, sir.
We arrived less than an hour later at the umbilical transport hub. The place was eerily quiet. It wasn't empty, however. There were corpses everywhere. Most noticeable to me were the corpses of the ghoulish revival squads. They had attempted to search among the dead for good clients and quickly paid the ultimate price. Hanging back now along a perimeter a block from the cavern-like entrance to the station, the surviving revival squads complained and stayed behind hastily erected barriers. I followed Graves, who met up with Adjunct Leeson. I rejoined Third Unit with Old Silver at my side. He was in a fine mood for a man condemned. I couldn't explain his attitude, but I knew I didn't like it. Leeson didn't hesitate to put his face into Claver's face. It was an odd spectacle, one man screaming and red-faced, the other smiling and unconcerned.
I know how you feel, kid, Claver told Leeson. I've been there. Believe me. Really sucks to be in the dark when the shit starts to fly. If you live through this one, take notes and learn for next time.
Leeson finally stalked off and I relaxed a little. I'd been charged with watching over Claver. He was unarmed, unarmored, and under arrest. Officially, he was an officer who had yet to face trial. Unfortunately, that meant I was in the odd position of protecting him. I followed Claver to the front lines. Harris was there, and he gave Claver a deadly stare. For the second time within a minute, I knew my prisoner's life was in jeopardy. Harris was good, I have to admit that. He knew the score. He knew I was Claver's jailer and bodyguard at the same time. What I should have seen coming was an underhanded move. Harris was a master at putting the hurt on a man when he least expected it. I should have, in retrospect, figured out what was going to happen. I'd been the veteran's victim often enough myself. Harris turned to me, ignoring Claver.
Nice of you to join us, McGill, he said. You know what we get to do now? We're going in that bat cave over there and down to the bottom of the station. The only thing lower than the vents on this mega-hab is the umbilical transport hub, and we're going to visit it personally.
It's been on my list of tourist destinations since we got here, Vet.
Harris shook his head, stood up, and turned toward the cavernous entrance to the transport hub. Naturally enough, I moved to stand next to him, and Claver came up behind the two of us. That was all the proximity that Harris needed. He took a step backward and stomped his boot down onto Claver's right foot with grinding force.
Now, stomping on another guy's foot is all fun and games back on Earth. But when you're wearing heavy armor weighing in at a ton or more, and you engage the power assist mode when you stomp, bones break. Claver went down, hissing and screeching. Harris whirled, almost catching him before he hit the ground.
"Oh, damn," he said. "Did I do that, adjunct? I'm sorry, man. I backed up right onto your foot. I'm so sorry, sir. Please accept my heartfelt apologies."
I put a gauntlet on Harris's forearm. Harris already had a short, white-hot length of force blade sticking out of it. He looked at me, and I shook my head. "Can't let you do it, vet, much as I'd like to." The force blade vanished. Harris's face shifted to one of innocence.
"McGill," he said, "you're a guardian angel. Did anyone ever tell you that?"
"No, vet. I don't believe they ever have."
"Well, it's true. And do you know when people see angels? Old people like you see them all the time, adjunct Claver, right before they die. Did you know that, adjunct Claver, sir?"
"Come on, vet," I said, and I finally got him to retreat. I noticed Claver was tapping on his forearm again. His expression was grim, but that might have been the pain.
"If you pricks are done laughing," he growled, "help me up and get a bio over here."
I signaled the bio people, one of whom had seen the fall and was already on her way. I tapped a short text to Natasha as well. She arrived and they worked on Claver together. The adjunct was on his feet again shortly, but limping. The bones wouldn't knit up for hours, but his boot had been turned into a cast, holding his foot so tightly he was able to walk on it. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Claver working on his tapper again. He paused, cursed, then repeated a series of gestures. Finally, he looked around after Natasha, then at me.
"Did that bitch disconnect my tapper?" he demanded.
"It's for the best, sir," I said.
"You don't have the authority to do that."
"Should I contact Centurion Graves? I'm sure he'll be glad to have our techs look over all your recent activity. If there's nothing unusual recorded, I bet he'll turn it back on." Claver bared his teeth at me, then nodded after a few seconds' thought.
"All right," he said. "Why not? We'll ride this out blindfolded and see how it ends."
I cocked my head, unsure of what he was talking about. Before I could ask anything else, an explosion rolled up against my back. My faceplate was open, but my armor took most of the heat and pressure. I turned, flipping down my visor and unlimbered my belcher. My ears stopped singing and started working again a second later. A horde of Tau were boiling up out of the transport hub entrance. They were wearing a shifting maroon light for clothing and non-existent silver shoes. Many of them had slim metal rods in their hands with knobs at the end. From these, they released bolts of energy that looked to me like lightning. Whoever these people were, they were pissed. They fired their strange weapons toward us, and each strike landed like a mortar. I think the only reason they didn't clear our line right off was because they barely knew how to aim their lightning rods. A bolt struck a puffcrete barrier right in front of me. It jumped as if kicked and was left smoking. I was knocked flat from the jolt, falling onto my face. Hunkering down there at my side was none other than adjunct Claver. He didn't talk to me or even look at me. Instead, he crawled on his belly away from the action. I couldn't really blame him for that. He was as good as naked and didn't even have a sidearm. All around me, troops opened up in a blaze of fire. The front rank of rebels, terrorists, whatever they were, went down in a heap. More came up behind them, raving. They snatched up fallen lightning rods and spread out, taking cover on both sides of the street. Bolts flew overhead, sizzling in the air. As a weaponeer, I was torn. Should I fire on this charging enemy, or go after Claver? I'd been put in charge of him, but as far as I could see, all he wanted was to keep breathing. I made a decision, and later I came to regret it. But there it was. I got to my knees, leveled my heavy weapon, and beamed the crowd.
My weapon was set for a mild-range cone, and it caught the front rank squarely. At least 8 of them smoked and fell. Their eyes boiled in their sockets like eggs. A few more bolts flew from this group, then they were nothing but dead ash on the street. It was a good shot, but it wasn't enough. We were being overrun. Looking around, I saw that at least half our heavy troopers were down and not moving. "Fall back!" roared Leeson, standing over me suddenly. "Third unit, fall back!" Clanking along in a half-crouch, I did the best I could do in heavy armor to follow his orders. But then, a moment later, something came up and kicked me in the ass. I'd been struck by artificial lightning. Falling again, I found I couldn't get back up. Systems failure, not in my body, but mechanical. My suit had shorted out, and I realized an instant later that this is what had happened to many of my fallen comrades. The lightning strikes not only blew things up, they operated as EMP blasts to fry our equipment. Overloaded couplings smoked all around me inside my suit, and the stink of burning insulation rolled into my nostrils. A face loomed in front of me then. It was none other than Old Silver.
"You like it in there, punk?"
he asked. I felt the jostling as he worked my sidearm out of its holster. This pissed me off. I'm a large, strong man, and I'd worked out like a man possessed to become a proper weaponeer. All that training had made me twice as strong as the day I joined Legion Varus. Despite the fact my power assist was dead, I snaked out my arm and clamped onto Claver's hand with my dead gauntlet. It felt strange, as if I was grabbing someone with 2 shovels, but I managed it. Claver cursed me desperately and tried to aim my own gun into my face. At this range, it would go right through my visor. My next action came without thinking. It was self-defense, pure and simple. I fired the explosive bolts on my suit. As far as I knew, no one had ever done that in combat, but I was trapped in a dead suit. I didn't feel like waiting around for Claver or one of these crazed rebels to finish me off. Not every suit has explosive bolts. Only weaponeers were so equipped. Because our kit was so heavy, they'd been installed in case of a power failure like the one I was experiencing. The 2 halves of my suit popped apart, and I was freed. I did a push-up, and the back half of the suit fell away. Claver looked startled, and I managed to slap away the pistol before he could pull the trigger. I grabbed him by the shirt and dragged him after me as I ran from the front lines. The battle was clearly over, and Legion Varus had lost. Chattering excitedly, the Tau killed everyone they caught. I ran with Claver stumbling and hobbling on his bad foot right behind me.
"You don't die easy, do you, son?"
he asked when we found a spot to hide and gasp for breath. I looked at him.
"I'll probably never have your silver hair, sir, but I don't like to die any more than the next man."
"Then you should take my advice, kid," he said. "Get off this station."
I frowned at him but didn't get a chance to reply. Something dashed against my skull. I spun around and slumped onto my back, staring up at the artificial sky. Claver fled. Stunned, trying to get up, I saw the rebel tower overrunning my position. Several of them ran past me, ignoring the unarmored human who couldn't even stand. But one man noticed me. He paused, aiming his lightning rod at me. He turned to chatter something to his fellows. Perhaps it was a joke, or maybe he was bragging. While his attention was diverted, I kicked his feet out from under him. Tau are skinny fellows, and he went down with a surprised squawk. On my knees and elbows, I made it to the lightning rod before he did. I shoved the butt end of the weapon into his mouth tentacles, and dark blood fountained. Heaving myself to my knees, I took a look around. There had to be 7 of them nearby, and another 70 within earshot. Already, they were pointing and converging. I lifted the unfamiliar weapon, aimed at the biggest knot of rebels in sight, and depressed a firing stud. Nothing happened. One of them returned the favor, and a bolt exploded an air car nearby. They were shooting at me. I didn't have much time to figure out an unfamiliar weapon. The controls weren't anything special to look at. There was a knob on top, but no sights, no readouts.
There were only two studs that I could find, one at the end and one at the front. I'd pushed on the front one, and it hadn't worked. I moved my hand to the rear one, but hesitated. A detachable-looking apparatus sat there like a battery pack at the rear end of a flashlight. Might that not be a release for the power source? These things had to use a fantastic amount of power very quickly. I tried pressing the forward stud again. This time I held it down, and that did the trick. Apparently you had to hold it depressed for a full second. Or maybe when it was low on its charge it took that long to cycle up and fire, I really didn't know. The bolt connected me to a group of three victims, briefly. My newfound weapon, their bodies, and the street formed a closed circuit. They died in an instant, and I had time to grin with blood in my mouth. The moment passed, and the rest of them fried me down to ash. Chapter 17. Awakening after a bad death is something I'll never get used to. But I didn't think this one was a really bad death. After all, I'd taken more than my weight and enemies down with me, and I doubted any of them were going to get a revive of any kind. I woke up gasping, and even after I got that under control, I had trouble breathing. There's always liquid in your lungs when you're reborn, thick stuff like snot. But this was worse than usual. I lay there hitching and trying to suck in air like a dying fish. I didn't open my eyes. New eyes were always painfully dazzled by the bright lights of the revival room. "He's a good grow, but there's an obstruction," said a male voice. It was probably one of the orderlies. "Where?" a woman asked. I found her voice vaguely familiar to my fuzzy mind. "Right lung. Might be a clot."
"Let him sit up. Let him cough it out. Sit up, McGill."
I squirmed, but couldn't sit up on my own. My rubbery muscles wouldn't obey me. I rolled off the platter thing they'd used to pull me out of the machine, and I went down on my hands and knees. I coughed and spat until I vomited, but nothing came out of my stomach or my lungs. Absolutely nothing, not even a trickle of bile. My guts were brand new and completely empty.
"Cough, don't puke," said the woman. "Cough, damn you."
I recognized the voice then. She was Anne. Anne Grant, a senior bio specialist who'd fought two campaigns with me. We'd both gotten each other killed and rescued on multiple occasions.
"Anne?"
I sputtered. Before she could reply, I began the coughing fit she'd been hoping for. Talking had triggered it. Blood and slime splattered on the floor.
"You good to go?"
she asked when I was finished. Her voice was softer than before, and I felt her light touch on my hair. I forced my eyes open at last and squinted up at her. The operating room lights were like twin suns behind her head.
"Never better," I rasped.
She laughed and put her hand on the back of my neck.
"Good. We need you back in the streets."
I sat up and dragged in ragged breaths. My lungs were clearing, but they burned inside.
"What's happening outside?"
"Lots of people are dying, that's what,"
she said with a trace of bitterness.
"This entire orbiting city has gone mad."
I looked at her, frowning.
"Because of the transport hub attack?"
She shook her head.
"That's old news. The unrest has spread."
"But how long has it been?"
I asked in confusion. To my mind, the attack was moments ago.
"How long was I out of the picture?"
Anne looked regretful.
"We couldn't revive you right away. Turov placed a limit on troop revivals. She's using Legion equipment to revive Tau's civvies. Only the important ones, of course. By important, I mean rich ones who are paying for the service. Can you believe that? She's spouting some crap about diplomatic relations."
I shook my head, confused.
"Imperator Turov? She can't have come out here so fast. Wait, how long was I dead? You didn't say."
3 days,
Anne said with a hint of an apology in her voice.
"You were gone for 3 days, James."
I put my face in my hands. I didn't feel well all of a sudden. Anne watched me and sighed.
Don't tell me you're going to freak out. You're fine. You're back. Don't think about the rest of it.
I knew her advice was sound, but I couldn't help myself. I'd been dead and gone for 3 whole days. My old body had probably been mulched by this time, maybe burnt or eaten or sold for fuel. Who knew with these people? What had happened to my existence during those long days? Could I really be the same man if I'd been dead for that long? Anne knelt beside me, checking my eyes and shouting orders now and then over her shoulders to her helpers. They were reloading the machine and filling tanks with protoplasm for flesh and calcium to grow fresh bones. 3 days. I'd been in limbo for longer than I'd ever been before. I couldn't get over it. Anne came close and stopped talking. I could feel her concern. She was one of those medical people who could compartmentalize her empathy and emotions, but who could still feel them. I gave in to a sudden impulse. I leaned awkwardly forward and kissed Anne. She blinked at me in surprise, then she gave a little laugh.
"That was inappropriate," she said.
"No, it wasn't. I wanted to do it. I've been wanting to for several existences. I thought I should give this version of myself a shot, since I didn't even know how long he has to breathe. In fact, you know what? I think the last version of me died a virgin. Isn't that sad?" Anne looked troubled. She ran her hand over mine and then gave me a light slap on the cheek.
"You're good to go, Specialist. On your feet!"
I stood up and pressed my body into clean clothing. My fingers were rubbery, and it took me a full minute to get dressed. I think I would have failed entirely if the clothes hadn't been smart enough to help wrap them over my skin. "I'm sorry about that," I said as I stepped toward the door. "I mean, the kiss." Anne turned away from her devilish machine and walked up to me. She gave me an odd look. Her expression was thoughtful, but I believed I knew what it meant.
"You want a date tonight?"
she asked. I pointed toward the machine. "With you, or with that thing?" She laughed tiredly.
"You know what I mean."
"Okay, then. When do you get off?"
"When the shift ends, or when this thing stops giving birth. I'll text you."
I gave her an awkward, slimy hug and left the chamber. When I reached my bunk, all I wanted to do was crash into it. But that wasn't meant to be. "There you are, McGill," Leeson said as he followed me to my bunk. "Had a nice rest?" "About 3 days' worth of non-existence, sir. I recommend it highly if you're feeling low." Leeson's lip twisted into a grimace. "Never mind about that. This platoon has been short both of our weaponeers for a long time, and we haven't been deployed. Sargon still hasn't been farted out of that machine yet. Turov is driving every commander in the Legion nuts with the slowdowns." "She excels at that, sir. Do you want me to pass your opinion on to the Imperator next time I meet her?" Leeson's eyes widened. "Hell no! Has she contacted you?" "Not since the Legion left Earth. But she had a private meeting with me the morning before we lifted off." "About what?" "She wanted me to throw the vote concerning our Legion's independence. She asked me to come out online as a supporter and reverse myself." "Ah, I remember your original post. Pretty funny. You were drunk when you wrote that, weren't you?" "Maybe a little." Leeson nodded and crossed his arms. "A man's true feelings come out of a bottle sometimes. Anyway, I'm glad you posted your little rant and that you didn't back down. Most of all, I'm glad the troops voted with you." I sat up.
"That's just it, sir. I don't think they really did. I mean, I probably had some effect, but I don't think they were going to vote to join hegemony anyway."
Leeson narrowed his eyes at me and grinned.
"Yeah, maybe not. But then you sealed it when you connected the enlisted people up to file their votes with Central before we left orbit. Just before the deadline, there was a flood of votes, you know. That took crazy balls. I'm glad it was you. I'd have been stripped of my rank by now."
I didn't mention to him that I'd suffered plenty of abuse from Turov already over the vote. I'd even been murdered in my own house. A nice, calm demotion would have been preferable. Is there a special reason you're paying